This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Okay, here we go, sports fans.
Afternoons on the Score.
The Bulls send all-star Jimmy Butler and their number 16 pick to the Minnesota Timberwolves in exchange for guard Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and the number 7 pick. Bulls GM Gar Foreman told Spiegel and Parkins moments ago they got the best deal they could for Butler.
We said that nobody's untradeable.
LaVine, he goes right.
Boom! Oh! Stop it, Samson! Did you not get the memo? He didn't come for the massage, he came for the facial!
We made a difficult decision today, and it was made most difficult because all of us in this organization like Fred Hoiberg a lot.
Coach Boylan installed a time clock at the practice facility.
This is whack, man.
It is the first all-star selection for Zach LaVine.
Paxson's built a couple winners in Chicago. Do you have confidence that your GM can get you the help you need?
They might speak differently, man, but you know, their table, man. I got to put the team first, but you know, it's just a situation we're in right now.
Stop. What's going on with the Chicago Bulls?
Man, this team doesn't like Jim Boylan because Jim Boylan is a hard ass.
Jim Boylan has been fired.
After 22 years with the Chicago Bulls, Gar Foreman was relieved of his duty.
Zach LaVine, first time in his career with 50.
The internal culture is not good. The plan is done. It's already a failure.
Oh, damn. We got Billy Donovan as our next coach.
What's your reaction or response to not playing down the stretch?
I mean, that's Billy's decision. You got to lay with it.
LaVine, step back three for the lead. Oh, what a shot by LaVine!
All right, Zach, there's somebody on Bulls Twitter named Ramina. Ramina 1690. She is the biggest Zach LaVine fan I've ever met in my life.
You know who she is. I appreciate it. You know, the support is always love.
Yeah, she's going to love that.
Zach LaVine, who many expect will be a max player.
Oh, he's coming.
Hi, Zach. Congratulations. What was besides the money, what was the main reason why you wanted to return to the Chicago Bulls?
I mean, Chicago's my home.
If you would have told me 3 years ago that Zach was going to flip to that kind of clutch mentality, I'd be like, nah, he's too nice. That's just not his makeup. But he did. He turned into evil Zach for a little while. And I wouldn't even say evil Zach, but he definitely changed and became about the business.
Zach LaVine once again landed in trade rumors.
As always, we're not going to comment on rumors.
Whenever there's something that needs to be said, it'll come from Zach LaVine or my representation.
We could all go home now, obviously. Just joking.
They go to LaVine at the top of the key. Three ball, good.
Bulls three-pointer number 1,050, Zach LaVine.
Some of the things that happened the last, you know, 2 years for him, it was a lot for him to handle, but I think the way he came out of it on the other side is really impressive.
Zach LaVine with a 360 slam dunk.
Sometimes I dream he is me like Zach. If I could be like Zach.
Zach LaVine has played his last game for the Bulls, part of a three-team trade that sends him to the Kings.
He's gone, and we couldn't do nothing about it.
the official adventures of
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score.
It is striking that the NBA has been able to take away the first 2 days of Super Bowl week away from the NFL because bleep is getting crazy in the association.
Yeah, it is. Big trade on Saturday night, and then the De'Aaron Fox, Zach LaVine trade on Sunday. Great Goodfellas treatment there by our guy, Chris Tannehill. And it's fascinating to think of the timeline of the organization with Gar getting fired and Pax leaving during Zach's regime, and then that brief flash after they got DeMar and they got Lonzo of a team with the best record in the Eastern Conference in the first half. And that's really all you got as a glimpse of what the ceiling could be with Zach LaVine. Other than that, it's been disappointing.
I know someone who lived through all of that and covered it. His name is Nick Friedel. He joins us. He's on the line right now. Odyssey Sports Insider Nick Friedel. If you're a fan of the NBA, make sure to check out the variety of NBA Odyssey podcasts wherever you get your content. What's up, sir?
Guys, it is fantastic to be with you, as always. It was a great treatment by Tanny, as always, and I had to laugh thinking through all the different years of, oh, well, Zach's the guy. I mean, he's going to be the star, and the Bulls are turning it around, and this is the first building block of everything that's to come. And now, what, 7 years later, here we are going, oh, God, they finally are hitting the button, probably 2-3 years too late. But now, unless they get some serious, serious lottery luck again, it is going to be a disaster for the next few years.
So it's interesting. Yeah, I totally agree about the feeling of Zach. 8 years. 8 years here. It's amazing. And I just realized what it kind of feels like to veterans like us a little. Maybe Jay Cutler's time here, where I spent the whole time from the moment Zach got traded here, like, ooh, is he good enough to build around? Is he good enough to be a star? And by the end of the time, you're like, I still don't think he's good enough to build around, but he's good. Jay was good. Like, Zach is good. They're just, neither of them are great. And Zach can't be the number one guy on a title team. And I think we all know that. And maybe we knew it then, but we spent all these years trying to figure out if there's a way to do something different with him.
Matt, they're in the perfect same category. They're good. They're just not good enough. Yeah. And that really is the LaVine era in Chicago. He was a great offensive player. He improved a little bit defensively over time. He was never the number one guy. And he was completely miscast in that role for this team. I will hold to forever with Karnisovas and Eversley. The single biggest mistake, and they made an absolute ton of them over the last few years here. But the biggest mistake was not moving LaVine when he had a year and a half left on that first extension that the Garm Pax gave him going back in time. They didn't move him. He stayed. Mike Reinsdorf, that whole ownership group, they signed off on giving LaVine the max extension, and it was just a mess from there moving forward. I think the Cutler comparison is actually a very good one because there was always hope. Well, if you surround Cutler with better pieces and if you surrounded Zach with more weapons, then this team could be better. No, they're not good enough on their own to be the guy that the Bears needed Cutler to be and the Bulls needed LaVine to be. And yet again, we're seeing that all the mistakes the Bulls have made have led us back into the same place that team was in 7-8 years ago.
Nick, considering the changes to the CBA, considering the changes to the draft lottery, how difficult is it to burn it down to rebuild it in today's NBA?
It's worse than it's ever been, Lawrence, and I think the difference is there was always that hope that if you bottom out completely, that you're going to be right up there towards the top of the lottery. And now, as we know, they've restructured everything, so that's not even possible. There are so many restrictions now, and the cap numbers have changed. And we saw the Luka deal a couple days ago, and now that's shifting. But it is really, really difficult to rebuild a team to get them back to some sort of contention, let alone trying to win championships again. So as usual with the Bulls, they have screwed up so many times with this new front office that the only thing that can save them is getting a top pick and finding Cooper Flagg and having him be that savior, or Harper from Rutgers. I mean, that is where we're at again in so many ways, guys. I can't tell you after that LaVine deal went down, I'm looking at my phone and I'm going, I've seen all my old friends from Chicago and they're saying, if we don't get Derek-like luck in the lottery, this is who it's going to be for the foreseeable future. And there are so many loyal Bulls fans, so many loyal basketball fans, as we know in that city. And to think if they don't hit right in the lottery with the contracts that they still have, it is going to be a long, long few years for the organization again.
How do you think the Acme Group has been able to convince ownership that they're on the right path? Because I don't see anything in their history of transactions that if I'm Michael Reinsdorf, I go, oh yeah, you guys should totally be the guys that are going to rebuild this thing.
Lawrence, there is zero. There is absolutely nothing that would lead you to believe that they can turn this around. This is one of the very worst front offices I've ever seen in the league, let alone we know all the bad front offices that have come through the top. These guys just don't seem to have a clue. It's like they don't know how to build on what they had, and they've somehow made it worse than when Gar and Pax left. So the only thing I can think is that Mike made this hire, and he wants to try and see this through, especially with Karnisovas, and this was his time to kind of get out of the large shadow of Jerry, his father. But there is absolutely no reason why those two guys should still be in place right now. They have failed miserably. There's no sign of hope, and there's no reason to believe that anything they do will be able to turn around the absolute mess that they've made.
Well, that wasn't wishy-washy. My goodness, Nick. Really? Worse than Garpax? I mean
yes, absolutely.
Really? But there was a vision. They just needed Lonzo, a very specific player, to complete it. Now, granted, the vision was to try and be like, maybe we'll be a 5 seed. A 4 or 5 or 6 seed. Like, that was the decision. And maybe that decision is flawed in and of itself. But yeah, the inactivity is pretty bad these last 3-4 years, just kind of wishing and hoping that Lonzo would get healthy.
The worst part, Matt, is that they built a team that wasn't good enough to begin with. And then you're hoping that the pieces can come together. But this goes back to the LaVine conversation at the top. If you're paying Zach LaVine max money, you need him to be a max player. He's not. You have DeRozan, who was pretty good, but he was never going to be a guy who was going to be that much of a difference maker. It's why he got traded out of Toronto, and it's why he's moved around the league. This team that was supposed to be different than what we'd all seen with Gar and Pax wasn't that much different at all. And they had less patience than who came before them. So there's just no doubt in my mind, especially now, guys, a few years into their reign, the amount of people that I talk to in the league still who will call or text me and go, what the hell are the Bulls doing, is more now than it's ever been. And that really is saying something, given what the three of us have lived through in that city for a long time.
Oh my God.
Nick Friedell joining us here on Spiegel and Holmes, talking about the Bulls, talking about the NBA. What next thing do you expect to happen with the Bulls? Is there a market for them to make some more moves that'll give them second round picks or something?
Yeah, I mean, they could just kind of give away Big Mooch. That's the next move. You've got to figure that is coming. You know, do you want to move Coby White? What does his market look like? Lawrence, this goes back, though, to the whole problem with Karnisovas and Eversley. The market that all these guys have isn't so much there where you think that they're going to get anything back in return that's really going to make a difference. That shows absolutely, not just to me and people who cover the league, to the front offices all across the NBA, you don't value what the Bulls have. This isn't even a case of all those years with Gar and Pax, the feeling was sometimes, well, they're overvaluing their own draft picks, or they're overvaluing the guys who have grown.
No doubt.
The talent's not. And when you don't have the talent, you have a complete disaster on your hands.
We're with Nick Friedell right here on 670 The Score. It's a Spiegel and Ohm show. Nick has the Odyssey Sports NBA Insider. All right, man. So you know what was so jarring Saturday night in part was that we're so used to superstars being in control. And Luka was clearly not in control. And it was like this happened to him, it seems. Do you believe that LeBron was in control of this trade, or at least in the know of this trade, or do you buy that he wasn't? What are your thoughts from that aspect of this deal first?
Mr. Spiegel, I've lived in the NBA world too long to believe that there was nobody who knew anything. That's what's killing me in this one. Like, oh, I didn't know. I mean, come on. Nobody knew one thing, really? That would be a total shock if everybody's actually telling the truth on that front. I say this to tell you, though, that this was the beginning of a totally different era in the league. Because if you're trading Luka at 25, who the entire world believes is all NBA, can be the face of not only the team, but the potential face of the league when Steph and LeBron finally retire and exit stage right, if you're moving him, they really must have hated him in Dallas. That is the only real takeaway. And there's stuff that started to spill out, and he was overweight, and they didn't like the way he carried himself. There's got to be more to that. There has to be. Because you don't move from a guy who's going to fill up your building every night, who is the caliber of player that he has shown to be since he came into the league, for a guy who, as we know, Anthony Davis is really good, but he's got his own injury concerns all over the place, and he's 6-7 years older. So the whole thing was completely jarring, but I'm not buying that 2-3 people in the basketball universe knew, and then, we just dropped it on everybody.
It's wild to how that happened. What were you doing when you found out? You were in these streets. You were in these streets.
I was, you know, it's hilarious. It felt like I had taken a time machine back to my old life, but I was on a date.
And
my phone started exploding. It was like, I've gone on way too many dates at this point in my life. And, I think back to all those times, guys, where the phone would start buzzing somewhere in Chicago and Derek had gotten hurt or something had happened. And boom, it's like the world stops. And right now, in that moment, I looked down at my phone and I was like, you've got to be bleeping kidding me. Because I thought there is no chance that they actually did this, that they moved off of Luka for Anthony Davis and one pick. Mm-hmm. It's still crazy for everybody to hear. But I really do believe at this stage for the league, if you're not completely tied to a guy and you don't believe in him wholeheartedly, when you sign for $350 million, then you've got real big problems. And it's very obvious they didn't buy him as the face they wanted him to be. And not only that, he's really slide. There's no way you make that deal unless you believe not only is he not the player everybody wanted him to be, but he's going to start decreasing in what we've seen over the next couple of years.
The part that I can't stop thinking about, the two things, the fact that LeBron didn't see it coming, I don't buy that. They hired his podcast partner to be the head coach. They drafted his son, and then we're supposed to believe that this shocked him. I don't buy that, Nick. But the other part is that Nico Harrison didn't shop Luka at all. So is he under the spell of his old buddy, Rob Pelinka? Is he trying to do right by his buddy and do right by LeBron? It's a fascinating choice to just zone in on one team and make that deal without shopping him.
It is the strangest move I think I've ever seen in a league that is filled with really bad moves and bad decisions. Speaks, I'm not saying it's the worst move ever because I do think Dallas is pretty good. I don't think they're going to win a title. I didn't with how they were set up right now anyway. But it is the most surprising move I've ever seen. And if you buy that nobody really knew, you're also buying that Pelinka and Nico Harrison were sitting there going, are we really about to do this? Are we really going to actually make this happen? They did. And now we wait to see who's right. But I can't remember anybody making a deal like this and putting out there, well, we're going to find out in 3 or 4 years what happens. You have pissed off your fan base something fierce in Dallas. When you do that, if you don't get immediate dividends, usually in the form of a title, you are absolutely gone.
What's going to happen with your guy, Jimmy Buckets?
Oh. Load up on the Pepto and the Motrin. I mean, you know, the more things change, the more they're never really going to change. I think it would have been fascinating, guys, if he actually landed in San Francisco with the Warriors. I think he would have fit in that room. And you know, maybe that deal still happens because Jimmy wants to win. But as we know with Jimmy, almost always it's about respect and ego. And when Miami decided they are not going to give him the money, he said, I'm out of here. He wants some to go somewhere where they're going to give him the money. They're going to give him the respect that comes with that. I don't think there is a place, if he wants to go to Phoenix, I mean, more power to Jimmy for finding his way there. I don't think they're good enough because they're going to have to give up whatever they have to get him. And at this stage, what would scare me if you're Jimmy is, and again, all three of us have lived this too, Jimmy is an unbelievable player and absolutely can raise the level of his game in the biggest of games. The issue that I would be worried about is his knees. When you are this old, you've had this many minutes on those tires for so long, I think he's got another push in him, certainly this postseason, if he gets out of Miami. I just would not be confident signing him for any length because I'd be worried that his body just can't withstand all those games anymore.
Talking to Nick Friedell makes it feel like time is a flat circle, you know, like because at the beginning of the Zach LaVine era was a Bulls team with Jimmy Butler as the main star. And a lot of us saying Jimmy's not good enough to be the centerpiece of a championship team. And I admit I celebrated the Jimmy Butler trade to Minnesota. So I was like, all right, this is interesting. This Lowry fella is interesting. And, you know, and you got Zach, like, let's see what they can do. And it felt like a breath of fresh air. And here we are 8 years later. It's crazy, isn't it, Nick? Like, this league just kind of keeps spinning and spinning, and similar storylines pop up with new twists.
Matt, all you need to play over and over to explain everything that's happened in Chicago is that theme song that we've all heard 3,000 different times, only the Bulls, only the one and only, because there is only one team that can consistently screw up in so many different directions. And it is sad because when they fired Tibbs and hearing Gar's voice took me right back. Oh, when Fred comes in here, Fred's going to be the guy and it's all going to get turned around. And now we're a decade later almost, and not one thing has turned around. And as we have discussed in this conversation, I think the Bulls are worse off right now than they have been in several decades, which is a scary, scary thought.
Only the Bulls. Oh,
no. I'm starting to shake here. My PTSD is coming back.
Yeah, no, you danced. You danced to this on your date on Saturday night, didn't you?
I wanted to get back to the date here. So is there? Are you going to see this person again?
Yes. I'm hoping to see them again. So me looking down at my phone, it didn't cost me this time, but I have a feeling that if it happens again, it's going to be all over.
Where'd you go on the date? What was the restaurant?
That's a good question.
Where did we go? I mean, I'm out of here in California right now.
Okay. Never mind.
I don't even remember. It was some sort of, I think it was like a wine tasting, which is even funnier. And I had to look down a few times like, wait a minute, I've had a lot of Cabernet here. Is this the real deal? And it really was. So, you know.
Nick, it's always
it is what it is.
A delight to have you on, man. And I'm sure that we are going to hit you up multiple times as this whole thing continues to be crazy. Thanks as always, my friend. Good luck, and we'll talk to you soon.
Guys, it's great to be with you. And if anybody wants to laugh about the Bulls, I'm always here for you, given what we've seen.
It's the truth. He's Nick Friedell, and he's brought to you by our friends over at Odyssey Sports NBA. He's their insider. Remember, check out the variety of NBA Odyssey podcasts wherever you get your content. That was fun.
Acme worse than Garpax?
I understand where he's coming from.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spiegel and Holmes.
It's LeVar Ball.
What's good? Triple B, big baller style. You guys go do your thing. I love your style.
Afternoons on the Score.
I think it's great. I'm excited for him because of the journey he's had, you know, to get back in between the lines and playing, and obviously give all the medical people a ton of credit of helping him get to that point. And, you know, I think he really always has felt pretty good about his situation here in Chicago, you know, which I think is great. And I think he's been a great inspiration to a lot of us. And I'm just happy that he's in between the lines playing, and he's got an opportunity to continue doing that, which is great.
Bulls head coach Billy Donovan talking about Lonzo Ball. Last night, the Bulls announced a 2-year deal with Lonzo Ball, a team option on that second year. If he finishes the deal, he'll make $20 million. And I'm stuck, Speaks, between some feelings on this.
Okay.
You know, like, we've been talking about Lonzo and, like, this medical miracle and how much I respect his game.
You love his game, and you love the story, and
I like the dude.
You like him as a big brother.
Yes.
Yes, sir, I know.
Absolutely. So that part, I can just kind of put over here and go, I'm so happy for Lonzo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm so happy he did the work. He never lost faith. He kept working, kept grinding. The medical people have created sort of a miracle.
Yes, they have.
Here, one, that he could just kind of walk. Two, that he got back. Three, that he's now finding that athleticism again, even though he's not playing back-to-back games. I just kind of wish that it would be over. Like, this whole era of Bulls stuff would be over, and he's the most frustrating, like, part of it.
Because
had he been healthy,
yeah, sure.
You know what I mean?
How different are
these last 4 years?
Yeah, no, I get that, because the constant outcry was from them, clearly, was like, if we had Lonzo, then things would have come together. No, I get that. Yeah, you got to divorce that past from the future and think about it from this way for next year and beyond, okay? You have a salary floor. You have to hit a certain number at a salary floor. You're going to pay some people while you're being bad. And the number that they are going to pay him next year of under $10 million, and then the option is for just over $10 million next year, is basically an NBA minimum deal. This guy doesn't have any value out there right now because of the understandable question about what his future is actually going to be. What his present could be is up to 26, 28 minutes. He can't play back-to-backs. No team that's actually trying to do something is going to go get him. Maybe they could have included him as some kind of piece, even a bigger deal. But let's just think about him as a property. He's not a very valuable property for another team at the deadline. And you're going to need bodies. And if he can play, if things do move forward, then you will have actually tremendous value in a guy like this that you could, of course, turn around and trade next year. Or you could use to teach people how to play ball. Because as you yourself know, nobody plays a more beautiful brand of ball. When he's rolling, he is not only a guy you want your players to learn from, he's a guy everybody wants to play with. You go to the gym, you're like, let me play with that guy.
His basketball IQ is through the bleeping roof.
If Matas Bezelis is going to learn how to be an NBAer and think about every way that you should think about using your tools in an NBA offense, learn from that guy. Watch that guy's work ethic.
And you're right, Speaks. The mid-level exception for next year. You want to take a guess at it?
This is good because he's making nine. Mid-level exception. It's in the 20s, isn't it?
Nuh-uh. The mid-level exception is...
Throw 14?
13 and a half, yep.
Okay.
So if you think of it that way and say that they're getting him for way less than the mid-level exception.
Yeah, it's nothing. It's nothing for a guy who could be so much. Like, there's incredible value, possibly. And at the very least, he's going to help your rebuild guys learn how to play ball and play in the right way. And so, like, there's that part of it. And then the other thing is, Lawrence is like, they ended up investing in each other. Bulls paid him. Bulls paid him for 3 years.
That's true.
At 20 mil. He's got to be appreciative on some level of like, oh, thanks for working with me and giving me this chance, letting me seek all my own doctors, dealing with my crazy ass father. Like, thanks for being a partner here. Why don't I give you guys just a nice little easy deal? You want a one-on-one? Sure. You want to pay me 10? That's great. I already made 60 these last 3 years. Didn't play a dime for you. So it is a win-win to me, this little contract. I wish I could just see it in the bubble. And if you saw it in the bubble, you might be able to accept it a little easier.
I mean, after hearing you talk about it, I'm closer to it than maybe I'm projecting out, but... It's still like, come on, man. Especially when you get this on the backside of it.
Tell me.
This from Mark Stein.
Yeah, because this is about Vooch, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this one is.
The Warriors made another run at Chicago's Nikola Vucevic.
We're outside of the bubble now.
On NBA trade deadline day, league sources say, but the talks fizzled as the teams could not agree on trade construction.
All right. So the Warriors wanted Vooch. And the Bulls kept him because they couldn't agree on trade construction?
I don't know.
So what is that? So that either means the quality of compensation, which you referenced in transition, is possible. Like, that would be bad. Or maybe it's a third team and a fourth team like you need these days. Does AK not know how to use the third and fourth team?
I don't know, but it just, all of it, it drives you crazy.
Why do we need Utah involved?
Well, we're going to hear from him later on. In the 5 o'clock hour, you're going to hear... From Arturis Karnišovas.
How many teams do I need to talk to?
And we're going to try to figure out a way to make it as entertaining as possible. But when we come back, we're excited. Friend of the station, Nick Allegretti, he's going to preview the Super Bowl for us and talk about Caleb and talk about Jaden Daniels and talk about dealing with Jalen Carter. There's a lot to discuss. Chicago's own Nick Allegretti next here on The Score.
I can argue both sides of however you feel about the Lonzo Ball signing. I argued with myself last night.
What was your initial reaction?
My initial thought is, what are you doing? Why didn't you trade him? Why didn't you trade him? I'd rather have assets. A second round pick, two second, whatever it is. A pick swap, something unprotected, whatever you got to do, get something, because he's not going to be a major part of anything that matters. And then I saw, okay, it's basically for free.
Time out. Let's make some.
It doesn't cost. I mean, really, that
it's not free.
It's a, but it is relative to the cap. It's not. The money's nothing. The money is negligible, movable. So it's, and the second year isn't fully guaranteed. So. At some point, the argument on the other side is, okay, you got to fill out a roster. Like, you have to field a team next year and maybe the year after.
But couldn't you field that team with draft assets that you got in the Lonzo Ball deal?
Maybe, but what I'm saying is, let's finish the thought, that, yeah, you've got to field a team. And Lonzo Ball, you know, is an example setter and somebody who's going to work hard, somebody who's, even if you can't play him in back-to-backs, he knows the plays. He can help. He's got value as a guy on a roster. If you're trying to eventually develop some people, he may be a catalyst for the development of other better players. So okay,
My initial reaction to this was why? Because if you're trying to take a direction at a fork in the road, you would seem to be all in on getting rid of everyone that has value and bringing in young players, and therefore letting young players lead the way and take the record, whatever they give you, which gives you more proverbial ping pong balls, if you will, for the NBA draft. And, you know, it was kind of ironic to me that they decided to give him this extension on another day in which he can't play a game because he's not allowed to play back-to-backs.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that he'll ever be able to play back-to-backs again in his career. And while his minutes restriction has gone up from about 25 to 28, that's a positive development. And he could be a guy who, even if you have a team full of young, unproven players trying to find their way, can be a senior leader, if you will. I guess he's okay doing that, but I could definitely see him as a guy who gets moved at the trade deadline next year or in 2 years or whenever, I guess, for a team that really needs a point guard.
Yeah, if he's able to stay healthy, it mitigates the injury risk, because I still don't know. They don't know. And like you say, you can't play him in back-to-back
games. We're in uncharted territory.
We have no idea how long a knee is going to hold up that's got cadaver cartilage in
it. He went 1,000 days without playing in an NBA game.
So it's my first thought was, huh? And I don't know what they could have gotten. Apparently, they could have gotten something, but I guess they've decided that there's value in having him around. And it's just, it's not a it's far from a prohibitive number.
I guess I'm reserving judgment because to me, this is just a piece of what did you do at the trade deadline? And they obviously went in a different direction with this particular player. And not only did they not trade him, but they extended him, which is kind of similar to what they did to Nikola Vucevic when they could have traded him.
Yeah, but now get on with it. Now you got to move Vuce.
So tomorrow, if we're having this conversation and there were no more players moved, now I'm looking at the Lonzo Ball thing saying, wait, are you guys really just trying to retool? I'm using air quotes for those of you not watching on Twitch. Are you just trying to retool as opposed to tear it down to the studs?
No, they have to. And if they don't move Vooch now, they'll move him before next season. This isn't your only opportunity to trade.
But having Vooch on your team increases the likelihood that you will indeed make the play-in. As you mentioned, that team directly behind them, what'd they do last night?
Yeah, you got to get on your guys out there in Philly. They got to figure that out.
Much like Lonzo Ball, Embiid also cannot play back-to-back, so they took an L.
We are going to keep you updated on everything going on at the NBA trade deadline, trying to ferret the rumors from the facts as we go today and lead you on up there. Matt Bowen is going to join us at noon after high noon. Kevin Harlan, who is calling Super Bowl 59 on Westwood 1, will tell us all about his preparation for the game at 12:25. At 1:25, Danan Hughes, the Chiefs radio network analyst and former Chiefs wide receiver, is going to be our guest to tell us what's happening. We're starting to get a little more serious about the game. A lot of the silliness is winding down. Although, you know, actually looking behind when we had Paul Pabst on yesterday on Radio Row, it looked fairly tame. Because Radio Row can get...
But that might have been where he was maybe, at that particular time.
I've been there when it's a circus.
And I've heard several people talk about this being one of the busier Radio Rows, so I'm not sure if that was just the framing of where he was. I think it's interesting that people are finally starting to get into this actual football game, even as the NBA trade deadline kind of hovers over us all, right? Like, by the time the trade deadline is over, it's going to be a normal end-of-the-week football, like just regular football at the end of the week, how we do this every week.
And this was something too that I mentioned last night, that as we were watching the Bulls game, and so there's no Adam Amin and no Stacey King. So the guy, what was it, Kevin Lynch? Was that the broadcaster who was like the third guy on the Timberwolves broadcast who was sitting next to Mark Schanowski last night doing color? And they had to pick up a guy from the other team to be their own the analyst.
Whatever works, man. Tough times out here.
But I'm saying the reason it works is because of Mark Brady and the job that he does with that broadcast. I mentioned on Twitter last night that to be scrambling the way they've been scrambling, all of a sudden you go from Amin and Stacey, then they're out, and then you've got Bill Wennington subbing in with Mark Schanowski. Mark makes the trip. They still don't have it. And for it to sound the way it sounds and look the way it looks and keep everything together, I hope people know how difficult that is on an NBA radio broadcast.
I think all of that is kind of reflective on what we have here in Chicago available to us in terms of the on-air personalities, the guys who call games. We just have, when you're in a major market such as this, you're not in the same type of scramble you would be in a very small market.
That may be true, but it is not easy when you're packing everything up you're going on the road
and to
present Bulls basketball in that way is really a hell of a thing that we kind of take for granted around here. 815 asks, is the re-signing of Lonzo leverage for obtaining LaMelo?
No. Hey, from no. your mouth to all of our ears.
No, the way you obtain LaMelo is with a lot of money and a lot of draft picks.
Do they have a lot of draft picks?
No.
Because they'll have some money. Have some money.
Hey, this is the old Reinsdorf team tactic. We got the family member signed.
Right, we got Yonder Alonso signed. Come on. No, this is, like, I love LaMelo, but man, I couldn't even imagine LaMelo and Giddy on the floor at the same time. Like, just fancy passing to each other and Harlem Globetrotters.
They move at
stuff.
Different speeds, though.
Yeah,
two.
I know, but they're both they've similar.
And one of their shot selections is much more. How shall I say this? Outrageous than the other. Have you seen LaMelo play? He has no filter in terms of shot selection.
No, I love it. I love it. LaMelo is he is like the modern incarnation of what Lloyd Daniels would have been. One of the best basketball players I've ever seen in my life, who never really got the shot that he deserved because he was shot too many times and it made it difficult for him. But that when I see LaMelo, I see that's what Lloyd Daniels could have been.
Well,
because they approach it similarly.
Let me tell you something. LaMelo has had some issues, as that team has had issues, right? But I feel like they're putting some things together where they're going to at least be entertaining to watch after getting the deal done with the Lakers last night. They've got shooters. They've got guys. Brandon Miller's out for the season, so that doesn't help when your number one, your first round pick, excuse me, from last year doesn't get to do his sophomore kind of step up. But yeah, everyone who watches LaMelo Ball would be good with LaMelo Ball being in a Bulls uniform.
But that's pie in the sky.
But that's a pipe. It's a pipe dream.
And so for today, it's a completely reasonable dream that they begin moving off of whatever other pieces they can for which they can find a buyer. Casey Johnson has tweeted that the talks are ongoing with the Golden State Warriors regarding Nikola Vucevic. So a lot of times it is up to the deadline and, in fact, past the deadline, because once we actually hit 2:00, it doesn't mean the deals can't become public if they just got in right at the wire. And as long as they're signed off, as long as somebody hits send at the right timestamp, they still count. So usually you give it about 15 to 20 minutes to determine what's come in under the wire.
So we'll go off the air not knowing if it's really done. No, actually, the transition, we should know.
I think so. I believe by the time transition's over, we should probably know.
I mean, that deal last night was late, the Lakers deal. And I need AK to let us know through his actions that this thing is really, because you keep falling back on if they don't do it now, they could do it in the offseason.
They could.
But I think we might see another play-in appearance, which I guess I'm fine with.
We might. I don't want to see it. I hope they don't want to see it. But you've got twin goals here. You have three objectives. And it depends how they prioritize those three objectives. One is start over. Tear down to rebuild. And that's the most important thing, is figuring out where the next good Bulls team, how are you envisioning the next Bulls team? The next one that's actually going to matter. Because that's going to take a while. The second thing is, are you actually trying to get worse now? Is that a goal of yours? If you have a price on that, if you say it is worth it to us to take less in trade, because you've already dithered, you've already waited, you've already depressed the value of your own assets by waiting a calendar year too long to do this. So at this point, you cut your losses and say, I'll take what I can get, and the getting worse has a value in that. because things, real needs are expensive. Real, and look, we'll talk about the Lakers deal in the next segment, but that is a case of overpaying for something you really need, which is okay when you're in their situation.
I think when you talk in generalities about the Bulls getting worse, you don't really mean getting worse. You just mean losing more games. Like, you want Matisse Thybulle to get better.
Yeah, he'll get worse before he gets better, probably.
If they keep all these guys and he's got it, if he's just starting games and he's starting with Kobe White and the other Nikola Vucevic.
I'd like Kobe to be gone.
Josh Giddey.
To be gone. Giddey's going to be here.
Yeah, so I think he's going to get better.
I mean, it's how I don't need him. I don't need his numbers to improve every game. I just need him to play.
No, you need him to get better, just get play. Better defensively, get better.
Play.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, when you say, are you trying to get worse? No. Are you just trying to lose more games? Those two things don't have to mean the same thing.
Well,
you can control some of that stuff by who you play and who you don't play.
Yeah, but Billy's goal is to win. Billy's trying to win games. So you got to coach-proof your roster.
You say, but isn't his goal? He's the one who got on at the mic and talked about developing young players and all that stuff. That means lots of playing time for Julian Phillips and Dalen Terry and Modest, a young THT.
He's not a material player.
No, I know. But I'm saying these are guys you can play and say we're going young. And it's a lot easier to go young when the veterans aren't on the roster.
That's what I mean. You got to coach-proof the team because if he's not going to bench Vooch.
No.
So
Vooch is one of the most durable players in the NBA.
He's trying to balance that. This is on AK right now. Even though Billy is the guy who does all the talking.
AK's talking today.
We'll see. We'll see what he's got to say other than, you know, we like what we have and we're going for the play-in. I hope that they can be really transparent right now. Just be honest about what you're doing. This build didn't work. They said it. You traded Zach. You traded Caruso. Get on with it.
DeMar.
This is over. So tear it down. Figure out. Just get assets. I don't care if they're second-round picks. That's the other side of the Lonzo thing. That would we be better off
with another second round
team?
Pick?
Would the Bulls have to ask that question? Would we be better off with the flexibility of a second round pick rather than gambling on the health of Lonzo Ball and what his value might be if you want to move him in the offseason, move him at the next deadline? So it's possible, and they're not paying him anything. So I'm not really worried about that. It's just that now they incur the risk rather than somebody else, rather than sort of banking his value and saying, look, we did it. We brought him back. We made him worth this. And now we can recoup his value. And now he's someone else's problem.
Sounds about right.
Mully and Haw. Live and local. Chicago Sports Talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, Arturis basically had mentioned in media day or maybe even last summer that the roster wasn't complete in terms of things that he was going to continue to do. And certainly there's time during the year that you can, you know, make decisions and moves and things like that. And obviously, I think everybody knows this time of year, there's obviously a lot of speculation with a lot of guys. So, you know, my anticipation is that probably things that they're still going to try to continue to do and continue to build out the team. You know, I really, you know, I think from an emotional standpoint of, you know, being with Zach for, you know, almost 5 years and then having Torrey for two and then getting a chance to really know Chris this year, those situations are always hard from a personal standpoint. But it's kind of the business side of it. I think everybody understands that. But my feeling is they're going to still continue to try to do things, you know, as an organization.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. That is the voice of Billy Donovan, the Bulls head coach. And he talked before the game yesterday. Always good to talk basketball with Billy Donovan. Always good to hear his thoughts on it. This is fascinating stuff just because the transition that the Bulls are going through, and we don't know how complete it will be. There needs to be another move, at least one more move, probably a handful, to be brutally honest about it, before you figure out what direction you're going, what you're doing, what you're looking for. They won a game last night, David, because they got
good performances from unexpected sources.
Well, Matis Pazelis being the first and most important reason why. It was a perfect 10.
Did you?
10 out of 10.
Yeah, I loved it. But did you anticipate 24 points from the Bulls wonder, the Australian wonder that is Josh Giddey?
Didn't expect 24 from Josh Giddey. I didn't expect them to have four players, 25 or younger, scoring 20 or more points. That is what you want a victory to look like when you commit to a youth movement. All players that contributed in a big way last night were younger players, guys that you could envision being part of the next core. Josh Giddey, yeah. I know you're not high on him, but you wonder what the Bulls think of him. You wonder where that is going with restricted free agency around the corner,
yeah,
and that next contract where it could be asking for as much as $30 million. Those are problems for another day. What isn't going to happen in the next 30 hours is really important. And I don't know if Vooch is going to go, Lonzo Ball is going to go. You got four guys maybe being traded. That
and two deals. I think they need to make two deals.
And I think that if they're going to be aggressive down this path, that's probably the right number to shoot for. That should be the goal. All of this is because the Bulls have declared what they want the rest of the season to be. And to me, I think to a lot of people, that was when they traded Zach LaVine, it was they're going to put themselves in a better draft position because of the quality of the draft class. If they continue to flirt with respectability because guys like Bazell's come through and guys like Giddey are playing better and, boy, look at Io and Kobe can't miss, I wonder what happens then, because then you're going to be flirting with a play-in spot because you're more competitive than you thought, and it looks like all you were trying to do was shed salary by trading Zach, and now you're kind of where you were but when you had him. It's going to be a fascinating final couple months of the season. I don't know if the Bulls are going to get any closer to drafting the next great Bull or not.
Will they get a first-round draft pick today?
For Vooch? I don't know.
Whatever deal they got to make.
I don't know if that's going to be the return. Maybe that's what they're holding out for.
That's a no.
That's a no. Yeah. I would like to see them. You would like to see them get an asset in return for a player. Something they're not going to just flip. You'd like to see them get some draft capital that they currently don't have.
Do you consider a second round pick a good acquisition and a deal for Vooch?
Well, it depends on what your motives are. And how do you prioritize your motives? I'm not crazy about it, but I think it's better than nothing. And if you trade Vooch, it's part of your concession. It's part of your concession to this season. It's addition by subtraction. You're getting worse to get better. And it's all part of that process.
I'm going
to
say it again. I don't know how bad you can get. I mean, I don't know how bad they can. I'm curious about that. Can they get worse than the Wizards, right? I don't see how. And even if you do.
No.
You still could easily lose the
I'm looking at the numbers. And as I said yesterday, it bears repeating because it's a good question. The best that you could probably hope for, or maybe the worst that you can probably hope for.
How bad can you be?
Is the fifth worst team in the league. Because right now, that's Toronto, and they're 16-34. The Bulls stand at 22-29. You're talking about six games, and you're looking at 5.5, according to the standings, because of the games played. But can you really become as bad as you want if you have as many good players as you have right now? So if the answer is no and you just want to commit to being bad, you're trading Vooch for a second-round pick and you're living with that.
Yeah.
If you want to stay competitive because you think that, well, we've done the big job. We got rid of Zach LaVine, so maybe now you see what happens. And I think all of this is under the context of, well, you know what? You got a coach in Billy Donovan that came here in 2020. We assumed it was because he wanted to get out of Oklahoma City because we assumed
they were going to rebuild.
And he didn't want to be a part of that. Yeah. He cleared up some misconceptions of that, or repeated and reiterated those things yesterday. He also kind of talked about, well, what are his plans if this does become a rebuild? How willing is he to be a part of it? This is what he had to say.
Yeah, I think that the feeling was, even, you know, I think you guys had talked a lot about it too, and I think we all felt the same way. You know, it was kind of like we were stuck maybe in the middle and we need to pick a direction, right? And I think that everybody was on board with that. And, you know, in some of these situations when you're trying to make moves and do different things, you've got to have a partner to be able to work with to be able to make those things happen. So, you know, I still think there's a long process in this, quite honestly, you know, as it relates to, you have a couple days or a few days left in this period. You're going to move into the draft. You're going to move into free agency in July. So there's going to be windows that these things are going to continue to happen. You know, I'm all for doing what's best for the organization. And I think all the way from top to bottom, I think everybody felt the same way. You know, we're kind of in the middle here. We're going to have to make a shift and do something. And I think that's been the goal to try to get that done.
So they're still in the middle. If they move Vooch, aren't they still in the middle? Or do they have more of a hole?
I think they have more of a hole. I think they have more of a hole because Vooch is a reliable, consistent scorer. He's a double-double. He's 11th in the league in rebounds.
Right.
This is a guy that gives you a presence in the paint. And I think if you get rid of that presence in the paint, you become worse defensively, even though he's not much defensively. You become a worse rebounding team, which complicates everything, and you don't have a consistent big man scorer. So that, to me, if you trade Vooch on the heels of trading Zach LaVine, yes, it makes you worse considerably.
Don't they have to trade him, though? Because he's 34 years old, because his contract is running out, and that is not a guy they're going to be re-signing. Mm-hmm. And I just want to clarify that there is a report out there from Mark Stein that the Bulls are thinking about giving a contract extension to Lonzo Ball. Now, that's the sort of thing that you want out there right on the eve of the trade deadline.
Yes.
Because you want to tell people, oh, he's done so well, we're thinking about keeping him. When in reality, I think I would cringe at a contract extension for Lonzo Ball because not just that he's 27, but that he hasn't played really in 3 years. He's still on a minute's limits. He still can't play back-to-back games, right? So you may say, wow, we're trending toward giving him an extension. And, you know, Stein may get that from the Bulls and report it. Doesn't necessarily mean that that is the way they're leaning or what's going to happen. And I got a lot of respect for his game. I like his game. But it's also his injury history.
Is it fiscally responsible to invest that much money into a guy who is such an injury risk?
And how much money is it? I mean,
well,
are you going to give him another
$80 million? It's the NBA. So you're talking about, you just gave Patrick Williams, I know it's not the same, but just the size of the contract with the cap continuing to go up, you gave Patrick Williams $90 million in a contract. What's Lonzo Ball at this stage of his career worth, even with the medical risk? I think that it's a number that's probably bigger than you want to invest in if you're the Bulls.
And he's you know, an incredibly gifted, talented guy that can see the court, that plays a two-way game. He's just a really good player, even as less than he once was. Now, do you have any faith that he is going to be able to avoid injury, that he's going to be able to play the 3 or 4 years you're talking about giving him? I don't. So I would not do that. But I do believe that he could help a contending team right now. Or in the case of a team like Sacramento, he could help them contend right now.
I think when you look at what they have at Sacramento, it makes a lot of sense. Lonzo Ball, if they want to trade him there. I would not like to see him in a Piston uniform. I would not like to see him in a Buck uniform. I think the other thing is, I don't know how long he should be in a Bulls uniform. You're right. They should be motivated to move him to get assets. I'd rather see them get assets for Lonzo Ball than to reinvest in his contract and restructure it or extend it, because I just don't know if it's going to be a risk worth taking. As much respect as you have for what he's been through, you stated well, it's just not somebody you can maybe can count on. And I would be cringy. It would make me cringy if they signed a contract extension.
And I think that the problem with a lot of players in the league, you know, Patrick Williams is a pretty good example, is that you feel invested in him because you drafted him, and you feel like he could kind of break through, and the
the next few years of his career could be better than the last few, and he's going to change as a player. And it's just he's clearly better coming off the bench than he was starting. But you probably regret, given the fact that he's got no trade value because of the contract, you probably regret giving him that contract. Now you got Josh Giddey coming out of contract. You know, the guy is, say what you want about him, he's whatever, 6'8", and he's a point guard, and he shows some things that he can do.
He has some moments.
But there are also limitations.
There are limitations.
So if you invest in him at the end of the year, aren't you getting further into the middle than you were before?
Well, that's a good question. It depends on who you draft. It depends on who you surround these players with, and that's going to be up to the front office to pick and mix and match and to draft the right guys. It seems like Matas Puzelis was a smart draft pick. I know it's early to maybe declare that, but last night was promising.
Well, it's the wrong day to declare.
It's the wrong day.
It's not too early.
But I think that, you know, they're encouraged by what he has shown in the last couple of weeks, especially last night. But also significant yesterday, and get back to the Billy Donovan piece of this, is that when Billy Donovan spoke pregame, I think he had intentions to try to clarify exactly how committed he is to what's going on. Because maybe we wondered, and a lot of people wonder around the team, but he wanted to remove any doubt about this narrative of him not being part of this rebuild.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the situation in Oklahoma City is totally different. You know, I think there was maybe a lot of things said or put out there publicly that I had no interest in a rebuild. That's not true. I never said that, never felt like that. Like I said, most of my time that I've been a coach, forget about college, I've been a coach outside Oklahoma City. I walked into an incredible team and an incredible opportunity. I'm always grateful for that, you know, because a lot of times when guys go to college to the NBA, they don't necessarily inherit a very good team. I obviously inherited a terrific team. To me, it's all about the direction and where we're going and what we're doing. And do they want me to be a part of that? You know what I mean? And I've had a great relationship with Jerry and Michael Reinsdorf. They've been unbelievable to me. I've had a great working relationship with Arturis and Mark, you know, the coaching staff, everybody. So when I say that, it's not like I'm trying to skirt the question. The biggest thing for me right now is I've just got to find out the direction we're going. And do they want me part of the direction? It's all, I think all those things, you know, play a factor. But to me, well, I guess what I'm saying is when we talk about like rebuild, retool, whatever word you want to use, that's all I've been a part of. Like I took over a program at Florida that had two straight losing seasons, and my first 2 years were losing seasons. I took over a team at more, like that's what happened. So it's not like throughout my time in coaching, and I know this, I think, I don't know, a 10th year in the NBA and God knows how many years in college, most of the time that's what you're dealing with. You know, I'm not like, I only want to coach ready-made teams. You know, that's really never what I'm about. You know, I'm about building something. So clearly we're making a shift. I want to be part of building something, but what direction we go in and how are we going to build it, what are we going to do? I don't think anybody inside the organization has those answers right now, just because I don't know if anything's totally complete at this point in time.
See, now that is a really interesting comment from his
and partner. Honest.
And it's brutally honest, and that is why I say this is a huge next 30 hours, whatever it is.
It is.
Until the trade deadline, because this, and when I said to you, they need to make more than one move.
They do.
That's because they need to declare. Getting rid of Zach was getting rid of a contract. It wasn't necessarily a direction a promulgation, because if it was, you didn't tell the coach. He didn't hear it.
He didn't say it. Sound like he heard it. And if you don't make another move, it just looks like you were making a salary dump and you weren't declaring a direction.
So that's why it's imperative that they make at least one more move. But to me, make a couple moves
and
here.
That's why it was such important to hear what he had to say yesterday. And I'm glad that he said what he said. I would feel much different about this rebuild. And this, I would feel less confident in the direction if Billy Donovan is not part of it. If he's got to stay for this to make sense to me.
Okay.
Because I just don't know why you would. It's weird because with the Bears now, with Ben Johnson, you have more confidence in him than Ryan Poles.
Yes.
With the Bulls, I have more confidence in Billy Donovan than I do Arturis Karnišovas right now.
Yes.
And I think maybe in concert they can do this, but I just don't know if you get rid of Billy Donovan, it would make any sense. It would make less sense to me,
right?
Because you need
that's a good point.
As he pointed out, has done this before. He's used to the grind, and he's used to developing players because He came at this from the college experience, and now the Bulls would be better off if they declare Lane and they do what you say they need to do, and I think they need to make two more moves. Keep the coach then, because you need that guy. You need some stability in the midst of all this other stuff.
I can't believe we're still discussing what their direction is as we sit here right now. But that's kind of the trick bag they're in, because you don't want to give a guy away like Vooch. You want to hang on for the last minute in the hopes that somehow you can get a first-round draft pick. But they have yet to be able to do that. They have moved pretty much all the established guys on this team.
Did they sway you at all by winning last night in the way that they won? And because Bezelis had a big night, did that affect our perception or interpretation of this?
I mean, it helped that they had a big night.
Yeah,
it helped
it probably
that Bezelis looked as good as he was. I think we're in here now not feeling like the pressure that, oh, God, what? Look at Billy doesn't know what they're doing. And,
right.
they can't get better. There is this feeling that Bezelis has gotten a little bit better. Maybe that kid is part of it. Maybe somebody is there moving forward.
And with Vooch still here, they're not bad enough.
No, they're not bad enough.
They're not bad enough yet.
That's fair. They need to get worse. I agree with you. They need to make some moves. All right, we understand that. We got Dan Wiederer. We're going to bring Dan in. The Bears have completed the coaching staff at this point. We'll get Dan's take on what's going down, what's happening, and what's next with the Chicago Bears. It's Mully and Haw on the Score. KC, good morning. How you doing?
Get your little Super Bowl week out of here, NFL. The NBA is trying to take over.
No
man.
Kidding.
I told
all
you,
week.
Payback for Christmas.
It is.
NBA didn't like the NFL playing on Christmas, so look what they've done.
It's like LeBron was behind everything.
LeBron's behind everything. Yeah.
Exactly.
But don't tell him about
crazy,
any trades coming
week,
up.
Crazy week. Yeah, crazy week.
Okay, KC, so we know that Steph and Jimmy Buckets take on the Bulls Saturday night on CHSN. Tip-off at 7. You'll be there. And hopefully you'll be able to elaborate if you are questioning anyone.
Well played. I love that from Modest. For those that don't know, Modest asked me to elaborate in a walk-off interview. I felt like saying, this is a walk-off interview, not a Senate cabinet hearing.
That'd have been a great answer. Come on, kid, just answer the question.
What? Here's the question. What are the Bulls doing? Who are they? What do they want? Where did they get here? I'm so confounded by the last couple days.
Yeah, they need to do more work. And Arturis said as much yesterday, and I know he's throwing a lot of heat for that news conference. We had a chance to do a sit down with him after for our network. He was much more at ease, relaxed, and I thought got his points across well in that interview, so you can check it out on our pregame show tomorrow. But yeah, I mean, the things that jumped out to me that he kept talking about were needing to do more. And, you know, it's clear that they've targeted young, experienced players. I mean, he kept mentioning the 9 players between 20 and 25. A lot of them have a lot of NBA experience. So, his model right now, since he doesn't have a star after trading Zach LaVine, I mean, Nikola Vucevic is still playing at a very high level and is in the borderline all-star range, but is on the backside of his career, is, you know, building out a roster that's deep. Now, you know, he drew some heat for that because, you know, the last team to win a title like that was I don't have the years in front of me, 04 Pistons. So we're talking 20 years removed. And even that team, you know, had at least one or two Hall of Famers on it. I have to look it up, Chauncey Billups being one. So, Bulls have a long way to go, a lot of work, but he did talk about wanting to get out of the middle, and they are definitely trending towards, you know, not being as competitive as they have been in the years past to improve their draft position. So we'll see where that goes.
So, KC, that was a very good interview. We played it on the Chicago Lead last night. AK was a little bit more relaxed and revealing with you, but just a little bit. And I feel like I'm not quite sure what to believe in terms of the new direction, if it is all new, because let's back up to beginning of the season. We were waiting for the Bulls to declare a lane because the premise was this draft class has a lot more of a deeper talent base than a lot of draft classes do. So now I'm a little confused, only because now it seems like making the play-in is a goal for a team that is stuck in the middle, and that's not typically or traditionally how you get out of the middle. So that's why I think it's murky.
Yeah, and 100%. And he clarified that. He brought up the playoffs and play-in unsolicited, and that's where things got a little off track. He went back and clarified that. This is now in the group session I'm talking about. He went back and clarified that. And we had had a chance to talk to AK out in L.A. at a practice at USC, the few writers around that trip. It was casual, you know, nothing for the record. But when he went back and clarified it, he said something then that he said to us that day in L.A. Basically what he means is, like, if they start playing Matis Buzelis 30 minutes a night, if they start playing Patrick Williams 30 minutes a night, they start playing Trey Jones 15 minutes a night, they start, you know, IO 30 minutes, and that team gets on a roll and just starts, like, winning games like wildfire, and they make the play-in. They're not going to stop that. They're not going to jump in front of that train and let that stop. So because, as he said, learning how to win games as a young player is development. It is growth. He understands how important this draft pick is. Trust me. We've talked to him about this many times behind the scenes. So he understands how important this draft pick is. I will say, separately from that, you are hearing now more and more from scouts that this draft may not be as good as everyone says it is after the top three. I think there's strong consensus, well, maybe even four, but there's strong consensus the top three, possibly four, are really, really strong picks. So then I know the logical follow-up is, all right, well, if that's the case, shouldn't the Bulls be going for the top four? And I think there is some merit to that. And I think that it would behoove them to not win many games and improve their draft lottery odds, especially with those odds being flattened. So we'll see how it plays out. I think prioritizing that draft pick is the best path forward. And keeping not only the 2025 pick, but also the 2026 pick, which by all accounts is a very good draft as well, it would behoove this rebuild as well.
You kind of made the point on Twitter, KC, that if you can't get a deal done, oftentimes you're sort of laying the groundwork for an off-season deal. Is that what's going on with Vooch? Is that what's going on with some of these other rumored moves?
Yeah, I mean, and look, I kept asking them both in the group and in the one-on-one about the guard glut because, okay, you got Lonzo back now, a little bit surprisingly, but on a very team-friendly deal. Josh Giddey's a restricted free agent. You've traded Alex Caruso for him. By all accounts, you're going to be re-signing him. Io's under contract until after next year. Kobe's under contract through next year. Trey Jones, I've heard, even though he's expiring, that he's liked internally. I'm not saying he will be back, but there's a possibility. Javon Carter's picking up that player option. I guarantee you that. I mean, what do we do? What are we doing here? It's like, how many guards do we have? So it's like that to me is an issue. I thought he might try to get out in front of it and make the painful decision to trade one of Kobe or Io because I think it'll be tough to extend both. But yeah, they, especially in the Vooch case, they've had a lot of talks about him. So, you know, the offseason is the next big moment to try to trade players, and he'll be an expiring moving into the summer. So I think they'll be revisiting that this offseason.
I don't want to belabor this, but I'm curious, legitimately, if you started the week and you were the Bulls and you traded Zach LaVine and finally got that done and that contract you finally were able to unload, was it with the expectation and the confidence that you would be able to move another asset, that you would be able to move either Vooch or Lonzo or Kobe or Io or somebody else? What was that when they did that move done confidently that there would be others that followed and it just didn't happen?
Yeah. So, I mean, I remember that. I mean, obviously it was only a few days ago, but I remember it really well. It was Sunday night, you know, we're on the plane home from Detroit, you know, because it's an afternoon game and we're working that story and we land and all I'm hearing is the Bulls are trying to do more. And so over the next few days, there was that expectation. I mean, I wasn't the only one reporting that. Others were too. And I was talking to people around the league and said the Bulls were still out there. So I can just tell you that I was working under the assumption that another move was coming and then one didn't happen. You know, it was clear with the Warriors and Vucevic that the Warriors went
to bigger targets. It's well documented now. They chased Durant and then pivoted and got Jimmy Butler. They did actually still have contracts to make a deal with Vooch work. I'm told that no formal offer was presented, so I can't speak for the Warriors, but my educated guess is that after making the big move with Jimmy Butler, they just wanted to let things calm down and see how that goes. So yeah, I mean, I like a lot of people thought another move was coming. And then when the Lonzo re-signing happened, that was the night we were in Minnesota, so that was Wednesday night. It made it seem like, okay, maybe they're just going to let things settle down and revisit things in the summer. So yeah, I was surprised as well.
Yeah, I was surprised that it got sort of contentious. I thought that the beat did a great job of kind of questioning AK, but as he was explaining his point on things, he pushed back a couple times. I don't know if he felt he wasn't making the correct point or if he felt it was unfair, some of the questions, but he really did push back a little where he might not have needed to.
Yeah, I mean, that's just good, healthy give and take. You've been there many times, Molly. And like I said, I agree with that, but I think, like I said, in my sit down with him after, he was in a different headspace and different frame of mind. I just don't, I've been around him now for, I knew him a little. I first met him when he was in Denver. I've been around him now for 5 years here. I mean, I don't think he loves speaking in front of a group. I mean, it's not his, yeah. I mean, it's been his first language for a long time, but it's not his first language. I mean, I just don't think he loves that part of the job. I mean, it's an important part of the job, but I don't think he loves it. This is my speculation. Mm-hmm. I've never talked to him about this. Mm-hmm. This is just my read on it. But I mean, I've had multiple conversations with him one-on-one where he's relaxed, funny, engaging. That's the part that I wish came out more. We had a podcast back when I worked at NBC Sports Chicago where he told his life story, which is a remarkable one, what he did to escape, Russian rule and stuff. And he was so relaxed and funny. And I wish more people got to see that part of him because I know that part is there.
I do too, Casey, because I think it's we all know this. When you're unable to manage perception, it can definitely affect your reality. And so it creates kind of this uncomfortable question because he's not able to project what he believes and knows and his expertise to fans. And fans now are questioning the Bulls, and I think you're going to hear it more often in the second or what's left of this season. And so I wonder this. Even though the fans now are going to go in a predictable direction, there are a lot of questions about the Bulls' direction. Does ownership at all have any questions about the direction? Are they on board with everything that AK presented yesterday and the way this trade deadline unfolded?
I haven't gotten to that point yet. What I will say in general from before yesterday, my understanding is that ownership, and you've heard this now from both Billy Donovan and Arturis, basically ownership is like, we'll support any direction you choose. Just get out of the middle. We're tired of being stuck in the middle. And you've heard Billy Donovan use that phrase. You've heard Arturis use that phrase. So, by trading Zach LaVine, you're probably not going to be in the middle anymore. You're going to get worse. So, my sense is, again, I have not talked to anybody since the press conference, but my sense is that ownership will, view that as a positive in terms of what they wanted him to do, get out of the middle. So, again, my thing moving forward is they've got to start developing these young players, and they've got to hit on these draft picks, and they've got to get as high a draft pick as possible.
I thought Billy he embraces the idea of a rebuild, retool, whatever you want to
call it. Organizational transition.
Yeah, that's what it was called. But then he also said that he wasn't sure which way they were going. Like, if you really listen to what he said during his news conference, he talked about the different words you use for it, and he likes to build something, but he didn't say that they were trying to dump out of the playoffs or whatever. It was just a weird... I mean, when you seem to go one way and then you kind of go back another way, and maybe he was just answering questions, but I just find it bizarre
that no one knows.
Those Billy comments over Tuesday night, what he was saying there was we don't fully know yet because there was 2 days until the deadline.
Right.
So that's the context of Billy. Look, I mean, yes, it's messy, and rebuilds are messy, and it's going to be painful. They have a lot more work to do. A lot. I mean, it's not like he wants to build out a roster of 9 or 10 players. Well, how many developed, you know, starting level on a championship team or rotation level player on a championship team players are on the roster right now? I'm not counting a lot, you know. So they have a lot of work to do. This is just the first step of it. And I expected more change, but Zach was the biggest one. Now we'll see where it goes this summer.
So you know this team as well as anybody, KC. Right now they're 22-30, and if the season ended today, they would be the 10th team in the play-in round. Last year they ended the season in 9th place. They were 29-43, and they were a team that were 39-43, and they were 9th seed. Do you expect the final 30 games to be basically what happened and how last season ended? This season will end too. Do you think they'll get considerably worse knowing they're not going to have Zach LaVine? What do you expect over the final 30 games from this team?
I mean, a lot of it depends on I think they will be way worse than last year. They're not winning 39 games, so let's start there. And then, you know, if Embiid stays healthy, I expect Philadelphia to pass them. So I don't think they'll be in the play-in. And I know for a fact they're going to start playing Matis Muzelis more. You've already seen that trend. And I think Billy will take a look at some of these new guys, maybe sprinkle them in here and there. So that will be clunky at times. They're going to be extremely defensively challenged. As they have been all year. Billy's been playing four guards a lot. Minnesota had season high 35, 37. I don't have it in front of me. Second chance points. I expect some losses down the stretch, which, you know, I know no one wants to watch losing basketball and players and coaches don't want to lose, but losing basketball will help the Bulls in the offseason. Prioritizing that draft pick, getting it as high as possible, to me, is the most important thing. That and Matis Muzelis and some other young players' development. Those are the storylines going down the stretch of the season from my perspective. Play-in is not a storyline from my perspective going down the stretch.
How important is the going down the stretch portion of the program to a guy like Josh Giddey? Is it as important to him as anyone? Because you got to make a decision on whether you're paying him. He will determine whether they pay him or not, right?
I talked to Josh about that recently. He said he's doing a pretty good job overall. I mean, he's human. He admits it comes into his head every once in a while. He's in a contract year, but he said he's doing a good job overall of just letting that, you know, wait till the summer. And then from a Bulls perspective, if they haven't learned from the Patrick Williams situation, then wow, that's all I got to say about that. And I'm not even hating on Patrick Williams because I still maintain $18 million a year is not going to be a prohibitive figure in this new collective bargaining agreement. I didn't love the 5 years. I didn't love the player option. But look, if Patrick Williams can find his footing like he has as a reserve, and he's making $18 million a year, and then, you know, maybe moves into a starting role, that's fine. $18 million a year is nothing in this new CBA. So if they haven't learned from just throwing out a number and not letting the market help set the direction of the negotiations, then I'll be shocked. So they need to play hardball with Josh Giddey, not even in a bad way, but just like you know, they don't need to overpay him. I mean, they've got
protect yourself
as it is.
It's good stuff, KC. I'm sorry, we sound a little frustrated, but it's just it's
a frustrating time if you're a Bulls fan. I get it. They get it. I mean, this is going to be painful. I've covered the Tim Floyd era. I've covered the other rebuilds. These are not fun, but they need to get out of the middle, and let's see where this goes, especially going into this offseason, guys.
Great stuff. Thanks, KC. Have a great weekend.
Thanks,
man.
KC.
All right, appreciate it, guys. Take it easy.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Getting back to you and these damn Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, we have got to get back to the Chicago Bulls because the boss, the person in charge of the Bulls, had some explaining to do.
Man, I'm afraid of this. Frankly, I'm a little afraid of this because they're in the middle and he's going to articulate it, and he doesn't always do well in that regard.
Here is Arturis Karnišovas talking about the Bulls and what they did and did not do at the trade deadline.
I want to take a moment to share my condolences on the passing of Virginia McCaskey. Our thoughts are with her family and the Bears organization. I want to start with a trade that we executed a couple of days ago. We want to thank Zach for 8 years that he gave to this organization. He grew his NBA career here in Chicago, and we know he will be missed by our fans and the Bulls organization who've been witness to that journey. A physically gifted and talented player, he has been excited to watch. He developed his leadership role and became an encouraging voice for young players. I know they respect him and felt fortunate to have played with him. We wish him the very best in his next chapter in Sacramento. You know, the pick that we received from San Antonio, in that perspective, following our trade, we now have full control of our future picks. So that's a good thing. I would like to kind of talk a little bit about the season. I thought we did a great job first 38 games, but hit the wall in January and had a couple of bad losses. Next 30 games will determine if we will be in play-in and playoffs. This is something that is achievable, and our guys are capable of getting there. I thought Billy did a great job this year getting a buy-in from our vets and young guys for how we want to play. We were pretty consistent with pace, running the floor and shooting threes. We've made big adjustments to our style of play this year, and we will continue to adjust as necessary. Billy is a great coach to work with and is always receptive to feedback and conversation. Billy and I are constantly discussing things we need to improve, like turnovers and reducing second chance points. It was evident yesterday. Billy, like all coaches, is driven to win and recognizes the importance of developing our young players. He does a great job trying to balance that. As I stated earlier this season, changes needed to be made, and we're taking the opportunity to learn, pivot, and take necessary steps to reshape our team. These moves help us to be more in control of our future. I know fans want a specific plan, and we're charting that path now. We are not done yet. We're in transitional phase, and there's more to come. We got through the trade deadline, and as we move through the rest of the season, the draft and free agency will continue shaping the future of this team. That's where the plan stands. We're committing to building a sustainable, competitive team. We're not okay with being in the middle, curating a team that competes at the high level and can compete for championship has been our goal. It can be a long process, and sometimes they require taking a step back before moving forward. Our commitment to the goal has not changed. This will take some time to fully unfold, but we're already made a significant shift. To our fans, I'm working tirelessly to put this team in the best position for long-term success. I'm constantly evaluating opportunities, making tough decisions, and staying proactive in shaping the roster. Every move is carefully considered with the goal of building a competitive and sustainable future. While the process takes time, and I know it's frustrating at times to me as well, my dedication to improving the team is of utmost importance. I know where responsibility lands, and I'm committed to making the right decision to elevate this team.
Wow. He says we are not okay with being in the middle, but everything else he says is okay with being in the middle. That was written. That was pre-written in terms of the comfort level and the choice.
I think that's Arturis is more comfortable reading something because, you know, English is not his native language.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd rather read this than try to do it off the cuff. But and I'm okay with that.
Okay. But the way that he's trying to say we've picked a lane. It doesn't sound like they've picked a lane, or he's threatening that soon. Oh, over the summer, maybe? Like, oh, blah, 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 blah. I mean, no, you're supposed to have just freaking picked a lane, and now he's saying they're going for the play-in?
Yep. And that they think that they have a good shot at it.
That it's achievable.
That's what I told you.
So they're not going even remotely backwards.
They looked up, and they were like, we're only 4.5 games out of the sixth spot. Since we can't get the deal that we want, like, let's pivot to that being the thing that we're going to do.
So why did they deal Zach? Why bother?
I
don't
know.
Because you're either going to deal and then deal more and go happily towards the bottom, or you're going to try for whatever you're trying for. Now they're trying to do both, and they got nothing of consequence?
Mm-hmm.
He's very bad at his job.
What if I told you that those questions that you were wondering about were asked by the people that were assembled there? Let's hear what the Bulls beat had to say to AK and what his responses were.
Wow.
Joe Colley, Chicago Sun-Times. I'm confused now with your statement.
Mm-hmm.
The actions are of a team that understands it's a sinking ship when you trade arguably your three best players mm-hmm. since the offseason. But if you're talking about still making a playoff push, it seems you are confused with what direction you're still going. I mean, I don't recall a team that's trying to get out of the middle that still wants to make a playoff push.
No, what I said that in our private also conversations with some of the media, you know, that if, you know, next 30 games we're going to be out of the play-in and out of the playoffs, we'll get a good pick. But at the same time, if we, with this young team, can make the play-in and playoffs, it's going to be, I think, it's going to be accomplishment, because if your young guys developing and translates into wins, I think there's growth. So that's what I'm meant to say.
I just want to ask you about, you know, we saw over the summer the trade you made for Caruso was for a player, not a bunch of draft picks. You know, even with Zach, you got a bunch of players back, your own draft pick. And just your philosophy again on draft picks. Why have you sort of, it seems like, not prioritized stockpiling extra draft picks for, you know, for this, as we've seen other teams, and kind of how you've value players instead of that? What is your philosophy just on that?
No, I think we've obviously value draft compensation and young players and then flexibility, I think, in that order. But again, we have nine players that are between 20 and 25. I think you have to have a right mix of players in order to, you know, to grow. You can't just roll out, you know, young players and think that they're just going to develop on their own. I think you need a right vets, you know, experienced guys to be around, you know, and I see, you know, in that Vooch and, you know, keeping Zoe in that kind of role.
Drew Stevens, the bigs, Arturis, there's an argument to be made that this franchise is no more relevant today than it was when you took over.
Mm-hmm.
Why should Bulls fans believe that you're the person who's going to steer this franchise back to prominence, and what is your plan to do so?
Well, I communicated that in my opening statement, pretty much, that, you know, obviously 3.5 years ago, we put a group together, and that didn't work. Right now, we're taking a step back a little bit and got younger, but we in complete control of our draft picks, and looking forward to what we can do the rest of the season, and we'll go to the draft and free agency, try to improve our team.
Cody Westerlund with the Score. Yes, no question. Did you ever get a first round pick offer for Zach that wasn't your own pick?
You wanted me to tell you details what it was offered or what it was, I mean, the actual deal that happened with San Antonio, that was the deal that we executed.
I'm saying from a different organization.
I'm not gonna talk about hypotheticals.
Okay.
Sir.
And then a follow-up, too. There's an argument to be made you could have kept your first-round pick by being in the bottom eight for the next couple of years. So what went into that calculation to get it back?
I think calculation went into to get our pick back so we have freedom this season and for, you know, for years to come.
Arturis, I mean, obviously, Billy talked about this earlier in the year after, I think it was back-to-back losses to Ant and some other star player.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine that you guys are taking a couple steps back, and, you know, it might not be at the speed that people like, but at the same time, until you land that star player, you're basically always just going to kind of be on the outside looking in.
Mm-hmm.
What's your plan to do that if it's not going to be to tank to get the highest pick possible? How do you think that's going to happen?
It just depends where we're going to land this year, right? I don't know. I cannot predict next 30 games.
But what you want to put yourself in the best position to have a higher
Yes. Yes. And I think by getting our pick back and not to worry about where we're going to land this year, you know, there's an opportunity during the draft, you know, to land another young player and consistently, obviously, look for opportunities to get a star player. I think in terms of moving forward, I think there's different structures that you can, you know, try to get to your championship. There's a 2-3, you know, star players and then a lot of role players, or you can build it as a 9-10 very good players. And I think now we're leaning towards to have a lot of solid good players, a 9-10 that can last through the season, because, you know, there's going to be injuries, and, you know, I think more and more teams are doing that.
Andy Seligman, AP. Wow. Arturs, just what was the thinking behind re-signing Lonzo, or extending Lonzo, I should say?
I mean, to have him last 3-4 years here, you know, and what he's been through, to see his growth this season and his resiliency even during this process of coming back, he's so good for this team and for our players. They love him. And I think he's good, you know, he's impacting the team the positive way. So we wanted to keep him.
So that was Arturis Karnišovas answering questions.
Wow.
And all of them were good.
Yeah, the questions were very strong. Very strong. Extremely, extremely strong. You know what I keep thinking about, Lawrence? I keep going higher and higher and higher until you get to the Reinsdorfs. And Michael, being Jerry's son, there was some thought, well, this is different, and that's why he's changing. That's why he's changing Garpacz, and this is his hire, and he's going for it. And it's a different philosophy. But this all just feels so very Reinsdorfian to be accepting the middle and, in fact, targeting the middle. And it reminds me of all those different times we've heard Jerry talk about. Remember the sports conference that he did out west where he kind of let you in on his overall philosophy of what it is to be an owner and how you want to be good, but not too good, because you want to keep, you know, the fans interested, but you don't want to try too hard. Or it was David Sampson, the former Marlins president, who said what Reinsdorf had told him was the best thing you can do is be in second place, because then you're pretty good all year, but then you don't have to bother with paying to get all the way to the very top and to keep your fans hungry for more. This is an ownership family that, after 6 titles and after lucking into one with the White Sox, has happily settled into going for the middle. And you've got a guy in AK and a guy in Billy both trying to voice their way around. And Billy did a pretty good job of dancing on the middle. AK does a horrible job of dancing around the middle and trying to explain the situation.
Well, he said they don't want to be in the middle anymore.
But that's everything they're doing. And every other answer said they are.
Yeah, I would agree with
that. The fact that you finished second or third or fourth, it doesn't mean you had a bad year.
Yeah, I mean, that's he's okay with that. He's okay with that every year. That's just the reality of your ownership group.
Here's the thing that I can't get over is hearing him talk multiple times when questioned about how this is going. He keeps talking about the importance of getting the pick back. And he's right. Like, you want to make sure that you don't have a top 10 protected pick. You're the person who gave the pick away. So you're fixing a problem that you caused. And I'm not sure that anyone's supposed to rejoice over that. The choice that you made was to go get DeMar DeRozan.
That's the trade where the pick went away, if anybody who doesn't know, when they chose the middle.
And now DeMar is gone, and it didn't work. So the idea of there being a level of trust, or we should be happy, like, well, you know, they got their pick back. They gave it away. They didn't value it. And that's why I'm glad that the question was asked about draft picks and not seemingly value it. And then his counter is, well, we got our pick back. We're mm-hmm. very excited about that.
Yeah. Right now, Lawrence, if you go to tankathon.com and you simulate the lottery, like I just did about 8 times during AK talking, the Bulls are at 9 and then 11. And then 9 again. One time they got all the way up to 4. But another time it was 9. And then back to 11. So what are you doing? If you're going to get worse, then truly get worse. then trade more than just Zach. You made that trade. We said they picked Elaine. Casey Johnson was on the morning show saying, finally, they picked Elaine. What's Casey going to say now? Fully informed. Doesn't sound like a Lane pick. Sounds like a Lane pick is going to be delayed again. And hasn't he said that before at the deadline? The next 27 games. We'll see what the next 27 games.
I think it was the next 28 games.
Right. And now he said the next 30 games. You're delaying it because you couldn't get any deals done because you're bad at this or because you don't want to.
And it's just so sad, too, because you keep doing that thing.
I told myself I wasn't going to get angry again.
Yeah.
He made me angry again.
I'm sorry that he made you angry.
But you know it. But that's how it happens. These guys try to talk about it, and you hear it. It's ridiculous.
Well, this is one of those things where it's so difficult to. I like AK. I like Mark Eversley. I think they're both smart. And we were talking during a break. I think both of them are one job too high. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like they've been promoted one spot ahead of where they probably should be.
Like Eversley is your lead scout or something like that.
Yeah.
AK is your lieutenant, which is what he was in Denver.
Yeah.
Your top lieutenant.
And hearing him try to work through all of this, it sounds ridiculous. And there's also the selling of hope inside there. Well, we'll see with these 30 games. We're not that far. I mean, we're right there in the play-in right now. I can't imagine that there's a Bulls fan within the sound of our voice that is like, oh, yeah, I want them to go for the play-in. Because that's what they've been doing the last two seasons.
Yeah.
They've been going for the play-in. And I know that going to a game is still fun.
Yeah, it is.
When we're at the United Center, there's still a lot of energy and a lot of heat to it. But you would hope that there's a philosophy of trying to win.
Mm.
And there just doesn't seem to be one.
And it wouldn't anger me as much if they didn't just finally give up and trade Zach for whatever the hell they could get. And you're not doing anything. So they think they're going to be just as good without Zach? With Modis getting time, I guess those are the conversations maybe, we'll shift to, and maybe that's what it'll be.
Maybe.
But God, it's frustrating.
It's really frustrating. And I thought that all those questions were pointed, and this is the way that it's supposed to be.
How is Coby White not dealt? How is Vooch not dealt? I mean, what are you doing? There are other people to play. Other people to try and find out what their ceilings are while you lose games. That's how you have to do it in the league. It's kind of a broken league that you have to do it that way, in my opinion, but that's how you have to do it.
And this is what happens, where you have people that seemingly are behind the curve of where the league is going, and their vision, you can't tell me that in the, 8 minutes of sound that we played from Arturis Karnišovas, that you walked away going, that guy's a winner as an executive.
No.
Or has a winning philosophy.
No.
There's
Or frankly has an understanding of the league and how it's supposed to work these days.
Or how his fan base feels about this. It's
He also got grumpy one time with Cowley saying, well, if we're going to talk about conversations that I had on the side with other media, right? Like he's like maybe Joe was referencing something Arturis had told him and Arturis didn't like that. And then he tried to muscle up on Cody.
Yeah, Cody's not here for the play-play.
Man, that was an ugly, ugly, bad showing.
It did not go well. It could have gone a lot better, and their choices are not good ones. We're going to lighten the mood, though. Next up, Adam McKay is going to join the show. I got questions and a pitch.
And oh, good. I'm looking forward to that. He knows basketball and knows sports better than sports people. And he wants to talk about why everybody ends up a Laker.
Okay, let's do that next here on The Score.